Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to note that this is the 250th broadcast of the Forum. Thank you to all of our listeners for helping us reach this momentous milestone. To mark the occasion, I hope you'll enjoy my interview with Facebook Chief Technology Officer Mike Schroepfer. Mike is a direct report to Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, and as CTO, he leads the development of the technology strategies and teams that will enable Facebook to connect billions of people around the world and make significant breakthroughs in fields like artificial intelligence and virtual reality. Before Facebook, Mike was the Vice President of Engineering at Mozilla Corporation, where he led the global and open product development process behind Firefox. Mike was formerly a distinguished engineer at Sun Microsystems, which acquired his company, CenterRun. He began his career working at various startups, including a digital effects software startup, where he developed the software that has been used in several major motion pictures. Mike holds a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, both in computer science, from Stanford University, and has filed 2 U.S. patents. I met with Mike at his office in Facebook headquarters in Menlo Park, California last week, and our conversation covered Facebook's 10-year plan, the 3 innovation pillars that he leads, examples of innovations that the organization are working on in the near and long term, methods he uses to evaluate recruits and employees, the way in which Facebook has maintained its innovative edge despite its extraordinary growth, and a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Last week, Mike and his team gave me a demonstration of the latest virtual reality developments as related to Oculus Rift, and then we met in his conference room for our interview. I began by asking him about the company's 3 innovation pillars that were announced earlier this year.
So we've pretty uniquely in the industry been very public about our kind of 10-year vision and roadmap, and we've kind of broken it down into 3 core areas. Connectivity, connecting, you know, the 4-ish billion people in the world who don't have internet access today, the majority of the world. The second is, you know, artificial intelligence and solving some of the core problems and building truly intelligent computer systems. And then the third is virtual reality and augmented reality, kind of building the next generation of computing systems that have probably the best promise that I'm aware of, you know, giving me the ability to feel like I'm present with someone in the same room, even if they're thousands of miles away.
With the significant resources and brain power that you have here at Facebook, how did you choose those 3?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, and a lot of this derives directly from Mark, the founder of the company, and you know, comes from the mission, which is, you know, making the world more open and connected, right? And so you think of this, I think of this very simply as, you know, using technology to connect people. And so we sit down and say, okay, if that's our goal, the thing we're uniquely suited for, what are the big problems in the world? And as you start breaking it down, actually these fall out, I think, quite naturally because, you know, well, the first problem is like if a bunch of the world doesn't even have basic connectivity to the internet, doesn't have Wikipedia or search, well, that's a P0, that's a fundamental problem. And then you break it down and you realize there are actually technological things that can happen there, solutions to problems there to dramatically reduce the cost of deploying infrastructure, which is the big limiting factor. It's just an economics problem. And then you kind of move into the, okay, once people are connected, you know, you run into the problem that you and I have, which is just, it's almost information overload. So much information out there that I could get the information, but I have limited time. And so I may not be getting the best information. Then realizing the only way to really scale that is to start building, you know, intelligent systems and AI that can really kind of be my real-time assistant all the time, making sure that I don't miss anything that's really critical, you know, to me, and don't spend my time on stuff that's less important. And the only way we know how to do that at the scale we operate at is artificial intelligence. And then you again say, okay, connectivity, and then like I'm getting the right information, but, you know, most of us have friends or family who aren't you know, physically next to us all the time, and we can't always be there for all the important moments in life. And the state-of-the-art technology we have for that right now is a video camera, right? If I want to capture a moment with my kids and remember it forever, that's the best we can do right now. And so the question is, well, what if I want to be there live and record those moments in a way that I can relive them 20 years from now as if I was there? And that's where virtual reality really comes in. You know, it gives you this capability of, you know, you put a headset on, you just experience it today, and it, you know, you feel like you are, you know, in a real world somewhere else, or virtual world, whatever you want to be.
Since this is a 10-year plan, Mike, how do you think about those longer-term goals, the things that are going to take a lot of stair steps to get to versus the near-term exhaust of ideas that are going to be commercialized and commercial-ready soon?
Yeah, these are all very different things. So, and I think that, you know, the biggest thing that I try to emphasize when we talk about 10-year is that to be patient when it doesn't work, right? Because no great thing takes a long time. It's just a straight linear shot, right? And even, you know, I've started companies in the past, you know, it's never a straight shot. You know, the time at Facebook is seen on the outside maybe as, you know, always things are going great, but there's a lot of ups and downs along the way. And so the key thing about this is to not get discouraged in the times when it's not going well and to give up. And then the other thing is, if you can have intermediate milestones along the way, which helps you understand that you're making progress, that's really handy. So, and these are all in very different, you know, realms of the world. AI is actually quite easy because, frankly, the team has already deployed tons of stuff that dramatically improves the Facebook experience every day. You know, this can be as simple as, you know, techniques to help us better rank photos so you don't miss the really important photos in your life, to some more fundamental things. Like earlier this year, we launched a technology, assistive technology, so that, you know, of the billions of images uploaded every day on Facebook, if you have a visual impairment and can't see them, we can generate and read you a caption, right? Which just couldn't ever do that at human scale. So these are happening kind of every day. And then at the same time, working on much harder problems. You know, how do you teach a computer to ingest a bunch of unstructured data, like a, you know, contents of a Wikipedia article, and then answer questions about it, right? Which seems very straightforward, but that is really the frontier of artificial intelligence, where you actually can reason and understand about things that aren't kind of pre-digested and pre-optimized by a person who put it in a nice key value format for you. And so when you look at that stuff is much more farther reaching and rudimentary. Or things like VR, where I think, you know, what we want to do is deliver products in the market today. So you can go into your Best Buy today, buy an Oculus Rift headset, and realize that that's going to be a relatively small market in 2016, right? Compared to the billion people a day use Facebook, it's going to seem tiny, you know, to the rest of the company. But, you know, we hope every year, you know, better content will occur. We will, you know, release updated systems every few years. And, you know, as the systems get better and cheaper and the content gets better, more and more people. And so lo and behold, in 10 years, you will have, you know, hundreds of millions of people in VR, you know, rather than a few million. And so having the patience for that ramp and not getting disappointed when it doesn't, you know, have that many users there short term. And then intermediate milestones on the connectivity side, like, you know, our first flight of Aquila a couple of weeks ago, which is awesome and just mind bending. And, you know, people were literally in tears, but that's the first flight of our first vehicle. You know, there's a long number of steps between that and a, you know, a vehicle that's fully ready to do our end goal, which is like, it's providing internet access for people, you know, where it's too expensive to, you know, lay fiber lines, you know, across a large area. So you try to have a long-term vision, be patient when things might fail, but then also have these intermediate steps where you can kind of be making progress and adding value and see where things are going.
To solve these problems you're going after requires not only a lot of brain power, but also people with a wide array of backgrounds, perhaps more so than when the company began. You need the whole swath of STEM topics. You need people with advanced neuroscience specialties and so on. Especially with such a war for talent in Silicon Valley, how do you think about things from a talent perspective?
I mean, honestly, this is the real joy of the job. Like we now are in this place where certainly it's a challenge to find talent, but you know, magic really occurs when you can get those cross-disciplinary, you know, you talk about flying this aircraft and, you know, you've got high-end composite materials, you've got electrical systems and electrical engines, you've got, you know, a key part of this is, using the latest generation battery technology to have weight using solar cells. And then we need a communication system that can actually beam, you know, internet up and down between this plane, which means we're doing, you know, free space optics and have, you know, laser communications and laser transmitters and receivers. You know, you need a software system that can actually help control flight, you know, on this aircraft, an aircraft that's never been built before. We need to build simulations of what this thing's going to look like. And so you have, you know, machine learning software, hardware, electrical, aeronautics, you know, material science, all of these things together. And then when you can get them into a small team, you know, this is, you know, a few dozen people together, and you get them clearly oriented on like, we're here for this goal. A lot of great stuff happens, and it's really, really fun to see that happen. And so we're just doing more and more of that and trying to figure out, you know, our core strategy in the company. Our technology is about bringing people together. So it's like, get them all in the same room, get everyone. It's like, are you here? Are you excited about this end goal? Yep. You know, you understand your part to contribute. Yep. And then a lot of magic kind of happens from there.
How much liberty do people have to explore ideas in areas of their own choosing?
A lot. I mean, we, you know, fundamental principle, even, you know, from the beginning of when I was here is look, you have really smart, well-educated people who, you know, at the top of their field, and so they can work anywhere. And so, you know, they're going to be best used if you have them working on the thing that they're excited about. You know, if they wake up in the morning and run into work because they can't wait to solve the problem, and then they're going to be doing, you know, produce a lot better stuff. And so, you know, there's certainly at times when we'll try to, you know, convince someone to work on something else, or, you know, explain to them what's important. But a lot of my job ends up being, all right, get the right talent here, and then so clearly and crisply articulate our end goal is to get, like, this is what I want you to work on. This is our end goal. Like, there's lots of ways you can contribute. Figure out which part of this makes you most excited and dive in and go. And if we can do that well, which is you're excited about this, you understand the end goal, then we can kind of put all the pieces together and build some of this technology. So there's a lot of freedom, I mean, in what we do. But, you know, in the end goal is we're trying to build stuff. And so, you know, we definitely want to get the stuff done and get it out.
How do you think about building an ecosystem to do this outside of the company in addition to the team you built inside the company?
Well, this is an area where we've tried to innovate a lot. You know, if you go back even 5 or 6 years to the foundation of the Open Compute Project, OCP, which I'm sure you're aware of. You know, to me, this was like, hey, everyone's accepted that open source is a great way to develop software. I mean, I used to work at Mozilla. We built a browser in open source. Pretty much every company out there has Linux running somewhere there. That's open source. We all contribute to the same Linux kernel, but didn't do it for hardware. So we said, let's do that for hardware, right? And so our data center designs, the buildings themselves, the racks, the servers, you know, all the stuff in there is open for people to collaborate. And now you have the whole industry collaborating, including very recently Google, you know, joining the effort. And so we're running that same kind of playbook now in connectivity. We say, okay, telecom infrastructure, and, you know, how we build radios for cellular, last mile cellular connectivity. And if we can get the industry together, it actually ends up benefiting everyone, because you kind of, you know, share in a bunch of the core IP. Everyone can build on the same components. You get economies of scale in production. Stuff is cheaper, and it gets more proliferated out there. And so we're, you know, trying to do it there. And then when you look at, you know, things like AI research, you know, we're aggressively publishing and open sourcing our work. We're in all the major conferences. You know, I was just reviewing with the team recently. One of the core advances they developed a few years ago is called memory networks. It's a way to attach a kind of a short-term memory to a convolutional neural net, adds a capability that didn't have before. Some of the earliest work there was in 2014. And since then, there's been 450 citations of that work. And, you know, every month there's a new paper out, which shows a new advancement and enhancement to that technique that improves on, you know, some basic question and answering benchmarks. And you kind of look at the aggregate rate of throughput of the entire industry versus if we just did it ourselves. And it's like, great, we can just fast forward to like, okay, we can build on the work that just happened, and now we're 2 years ahead of where we would be if we tried to do it just ourselves. And so, and it's a fundamental technology that if it works can benefit lots of things other than Facebook. It can, so I think whenever we can do that, we are big fans of that.
I'm also curious, how do you keep yourself abreast of new innovations that are happening both at the company, but also importantly outside of the company? What sort of intellectual diet do you have, so to speak?
Well, I mean, this is where I think I might have the best job in the industry. I mean, I the thing I get to do that is truly, first of all, read everything I can see, but even better than that is I get to go sit down and talk with the teams actually doing the work. And that's by far the best part of my day. And so, you know, just a few weeks ago, I sat down with the Facebook AI research team, and we did a day-long briefing on, you know, all of the work they're doing. And this is, you know, here's Jan LeCun, who, you know, has like written the seminal papers on convolutional neural nets in the 90s, you know, taking through me on what's his vision of where we're going. And that team is again reviewing not just the work they're doing, but all the work that, because they publish and open source it, other people have built on top of that and similar work solving similar problems. So I get kind of, you know, and then I walk away from that and get to go talk to some people here who are building, you know, some of the latest social apps in VR and kind of look at what we're trying out there. And then obviously get a chance to talk to people in the industry, whether it's at conferences or just, you know, seeing people doing interesting work and getting a chance to understand, what's happening there. So, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's honestly hard to keep up with because there's so much stuff happening all the time and it's all really fun and fascinating.
Having had a chance to walk around headquarters here, I wanted to ask you how you thought about creating this space that fosters such collaboration. We talked about that you need the intersection of a variety of disciplines in order to be successful. So I'm curious how you thought about setting this up so that you stimulate the greatest amount of collaboration.
I mean, it's something we think about. I mean, you're sitting in a building here, which is one of the world's largest single floor office buildings. 2,800 people on a single floor with no, you know, individualized offices. You see everyone sitting out, you know, in desks here. And so, and this was designed as an, you know, as an experiment to see like how far could we push the like collaboration of getting someone, you know, literally, you know, thousands of people in the same room to do it. And then obviously, you know, you can see these, you know, VC systems behind us that, you know, we have in every single room so that people can VC between our major offices. And obviously one of the, you know, secret weapons we've had that we've now actually made available to others is Facebook itself, which is just, everyone's on Facebook all day because we work here. And it turns out to be a great collaboration tool. You have Facebook groups, you have Facebook Messenger, you have all these great ways, which are fundamentally about aggregating a bunch of information and making me able to keep up with it. It could be what my friends are up to, or it could be, you know, what 16 different teams are kind of working on at the same time. The tools work very well for that too. And the subtle thing that I think a lot of people miss is, you know, the key to collaboration is really when people can bring their perspective, their point of view, their expertise, and actually spend the time it takes to understand the other person and empathize with what they're working on, what, you know, what problem. You know, this could be across domains. Like I'm a machine learning person. I'm trying to understand, you know, what a medical doctor is trying to do to look at patterns in drug discovery. And the more I can understand about their problem, the more I can help them with that, right? And so a lot of what our kind of culture builds is that basic empathy, because you're on Facebook. And so not only you're seeing what's going on with colleagues at work, but you're seeing what's going on in their real life too, right? You know, kids going off to school next week or coming back from vacation. And it brings this sense of cohesion that I haven't ever experienced, you know, in any other organization anywhere near our scale.
As the organization grows and as it becomes a technology behemoth, to what extent do you worry or think about maintaining that smaller company feel, that more entrepreneurial spirit, so to speak? There are many innovative companies that have come before you that have had bright days in the sun and then experienced rainy days not so long thereafter. So I'm curious, is this something that you think about on a daily basis?
I think it's some of the things that we think about all the time. And, you know, the first is there's pros and cons of growth. You know, the pro is we're working on all of this exciting stuff and we have specialists in all these areas. And so if you're, you know, an engineer joining the company and you want to learn more about AI or about, you know, aircraft or about virtual reality, like we have all of that for you to do in-house today, which is awesome. That's a really big plus. But it's challenging to get, you know, a larger group of people unified under a common mission. And so, you know, I think this boils down to a couple of things, and we work on this all the time. You know, the first is, you know, you want people to have a real sense of alignment towards the end goal, right? This is what can happen in a larger organization is it gets very federated and everyone's kind of working on different things. And so their kind of goals aren't aligned. And so, you know, we're very clear about our mission, you know, connecting people, using technology to connect people. And we're very clear that if you're excited about that, awesome, come here. And if you're not, lots of other great places to work, you know. And so I think starting there. And then, you know, I like to think of it as, you know, a lot of our job is engineering the culture. You think about engineering, building a system. Well, the way in which we all work together is a system and we can spend time engineering that. And so, as simple as what's your onboarding experience as a new hire. You know, for most companies, that's a day and a half of, you know, filling out a bunch of paperwork. You know, for us, it's a 6-week intensive boot camp onboarding, which is designed to get you as exposed to as much technology and people across the company as possible. So at the end of those 6 weeks, no matter what you're working on, you know, you've met probably hundreds of engineers across the company, not just in a superficial way. You've like written a piece of code and had someone review it, and you've poked around and talked to them and asked them about a bug. And so that when you exit boot camp, you know, you can think of it as we build this, A, everyone in boot camp gets to know each other really well because they're all, you know, whether I'm 15 years in industry or just came out of college, we're both figuring out Facebook. And so that builds a bond there. And then that, you know, kind of diaspora kind of gets spread throughout the company. And so you build these connections between those people in their class. And each one of those individuals met tons of people all across the company. And so when they're like, hey, I got a question about what that team is doing, it's like, oh, right, I met, you know, Mary when I was working on this bug. I'll go ask her. Maybe she knows who to talk to. And it builds those loose connections that are so critical to kind of building that cohesion. And I could go on and on because we have program after program designed to solve this exact problem, which is, you know, building cohesion across the groups. You know, after boot camp, it's hack a month where you, 18 months into your job, take a month and go completely rotate to another team. You can learn a new skill, work in a different area entirely, meet a whole new group of people, and just kind of continue this cohesion across.
You did that yourself. You and Sheryl Sandberg switched jobs, as I have read.
Absolutely. Switched jobs for a week and kind of, again, learn what it's like to be in her shoes and vice versa. And so, you know, just trying to keep it mixed up wherever we can, which, you know, I think is helping. It's certainly a hard problem, so there's a lot to work on, but it's something we focus a lot on.
If I could take it one step further back in the chain to the recruiting process, how do you evaluate talent through recruiting? Especially now that the company is shooting for these long-term objectives and the growth is so high, which means such a great number of people need to be hired on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis. I'm curious, how do you evaluate people and ensure that the quality of talent isn't decreasing as you grow?
First obvious thing you want to do is, do they have the raw, you know, skills needed to accomplish the job? And that it's a much broader palette than it used to be. It used to be mostly software engineering, but now it could be electrical engineering, mechanical engineering. It could be, you know, a specialist in AI. And so for each of those roles, there's different ways, but it basically boils down to some form of, you know, technical verification that they are, you know, state of the art in that field and whatever the domain is. And then the second is, you know, collaboration is very important to us. It's just, you know, part of the interview process is collaborative problem solving, right? And half of it is, did they get the right answer? And the other half is like, you know, are they able to work with the other person in the room towards that answer? Because that's the way the real world is. You know, Hollywood has the person in the basement, you know, solo creating everything. And like, nothing interesting I've ever seen has been made that way. So, you know, it's always a team. And so we just want to make sure that this person can communicate and collaborate well with the group. And that's, you know, that's what we look for.
Well, Mike Schrepfer, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing a bit about your perspectives on the future of Facebook. It's been a great conversation. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships.
Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.